Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Dream Job Ready podcast. My name is Dane Sharp, I'm your host, and I've got a super exciting episode for you today. So I am in Kiama, New South Wales, Australia, sitting in the house of our guest. Our guest is Darren/Daz Longbottom. I was put onto Darren's book quite recently. Beyond the Break is the name of the book, which we'll talk about today. And I was just inspired, surprised, alarmed, every feeling under the sun reading the book. I'd known a little bit about Darren's backstory, but you know, obviously feel like I know you, which makes always these interviews always awkward, through the book, mate. And I was really keen to get you on this podcast, more so because throughout the book, something that hit me a lot was the, I guess, inspiration and motivation that work and your job and your profession and your craft gave you throughout your story. Now, what is your story for those that don't know? I'm going to throw it to you because in this podcast, we won't be able to tell the whole story. We won't do it justice in the short amount of time we have, but we'll definitely talk about parts of it. And I'd love you, if you can, to give us, I guess, in your words, what your summary is when you tell people about the trip you did, which was a surfing trip, the accident that you had, and I guess the events that followed, which make up your book, Beyond the Break.
Okay, well, thanks for having me, Dane. Basically, the story goes that, you know, as surfers, we all look for that dream sort of holiday destination where we're surfing perfect waves. So, you know, we took a charter boat over in the Mentawais, which is islands off the southwest coast of Sumatra in Indonesia. 14-hour boat ride off the mainland, away from any sort of civilization. So, surfing perfect waves, palm trees everywhere, isolated islands, grabbing great waves with great friends. And one morning, surfing out there like any other day, caught a wave, went flying down the wave, pulled off, and I bailed off the back of the wave, which many might have seen in the movies or on film. Just done a few somersaults up in the sky, came down and basically landed head first, thought I was going into water, but crashed through my surfboard and crushing my neck, instantly paralyzed, and knocked me out unconscious just laying in the water. I was out for about 45 seconds. Luckily, I had friends close by who sort of seen something that was going on. We had a jet ski there, so he was coming past. He was the first one that discovered me. And then it was basically, I just discovered I was paralyzed. Well, I hadn't discovered I was paralyzed at that moment. Boys came in, rescued me, got me on the back of the jet ski, on the back of the sled on the jet ski. That was a bit of a mission, you know, sitting in the impact zone. But we got out, and as we went out in the jet ski stopped. And at that point, I seen, one of my legs fly past my eyesight, and realised then and then that I couldn't feel anything. Paralysed, and I just went out of it. So the next 24 hours was the whole rescue recovery mission. I blanked out of it then. The guys got me back to the boat, lifted me up onto the back of the boat, and then it was where do we go from here? No hospitals, no doctors, no medical, no nothing. So a couple of hours of frantic calling, medical guys overseas, insurance companies. We worked out we were sort of all alone. So everyone was flying by the seat of their pants. We did happen after a couple of hours. Well, at that time, there was a fuel crisis in Indonesia at that point. So the medevac helicopter that was coming from Jakarta could get to us but couldn't get back. So that was off the table. We couldn't boat back because our boat was too slow. We couldn't take the speed boat because it was too bumpy. So we found all guys from another boat knew of a doctor, an independent doctor up in the Northern Atolls, which had a helicopter. They got onto him. He agreed to come down and help medevac me to the mainland. So we waited there for a few hours. He eventually arrived, and when he arrived, we realised it was a tiny helicopter. How were we actually going to get me in there? So the options were to tie me on underneath the helicopter to fly me to the mainland or jam me in. And obviously being a spinal patient, pretty worked out that I'd broken my neck. I've got to be, immobilised. But the options were to tie me on underneath or, to jam me in there. The boys didn't want to tie me underneath for good reasons. So the next option was to sit me upright and jam me in this helicopter. So we eventually got me in the helicopter after ripping out doors and seats. And we took off. I had to take off on my own, so I had to leave all my friends there. So I was in the hands of this helicopter and this doctor. And the plan was to arrive at Padang. There was a medevac jet waiting for us from Singapore on the tarmac, and there was an ambulance crew going to meet us at the rendezvous point, get me back to the plane. So we took off. We flew low across to the mainland. That was, like I said, it was a small helicopter, so that was taking quite a long time. And as we were flying up the coast, sun was setting, so it was getting dark. The chopper was running out of petrol. All he had was a little Nokia 5150 yellow phone. So no communication. At one point, I was like a little kid just asking, are we there yet? Are we there yet? And at one point, he just started circling this little opening in the forest. As it was getting dark, I couldn't speak to him because, loud sort of tinny helicopter, and realised that we were landing, out in the middle of nowhere. We landed. A few sort of villagers were around. They were playing some sort of sport. So we landed. Helicopter doctor had to go make contact, obviously speaking a different language. He had to come back to me. I had to get out of the helicopter. I basically had to lay me down in dirt. At this point, I still had half a surfboard strapped to my back as a spinal board. He realised that there was no help there. We needed some sort of transportation to get us to the rendezvous point. So he's come back to me and asked, I need to go get help. I need to leave you here. So basically I was left in the jungle there for a few hours on my own. I was all strapped in, so I couldn't move. I couldn't talk at that time. So all I had was my mind, all these people around. They were all curious guys. They hadn't seen anything like this before. So alone for 3 hours, what I thought was 3 hours. Eventually he's come back with what I thought was an ambulance, but it was just an old rickshaw van. They're throwing me in there, another 2 or 3 hour drive to the airport. Got to the airport and I could see the jet, but the airport had closed down. The ambulance crew that were supposed to transport us had gone out looking for us. We'd disappeared off the face of the earth for half a day. No one could get in contact with us. No one knew where we were. So I sat in the car park there for a couple of hours. Until eventually somebody came back, got on the jet and flew to Singapore. So this whole day, you know, from point of breaking my neck to getting safely to a hospital was around 22 hours. That's basically the story. Anything that could go wrong did go wrong on the whole process.
Mate, that's how it got explained to me when, you know, a friend of mine told me about your book was, imagine being in the most remote place you can think of. And for those that are listening that aren't a surfer or haven't been to the Mentawais, you know, in some respects, you know, maybe think about Tom Hanks's Castaway movie or just imagine one of the, you know, one of those little islands you've seen on a picture. It's like that to some degree. So that was explained to me was imagine being as remote as you can and then everything you can think of if you've got an imagination going wrong. And again, you know, that I really appreciate that summary. That was brilliant. You know, I do implore everyone to read your book because it's that times 10, obviously, when you start going into the detail. And you talked about time. And that's one thing that really resonated as well when I was reading it was the essence of time. You know, I can't imagine how that didn't feel, and I'm sure it probably did, felt like a lifetime. Probably also felt like 1 minute, like, and then every other second in between. You know, if you can sort of relate that to those that haven't had to go through that type of, you know, 24-hour, 28-hour intense journey, but mother time catches up with everyone. Is that something that's sort of sat with you ever since, is the essence of time? And we've got a lot of time, but we also don't have a lot of time to, you know, achieve things, do things, live our lives, etc. Has that sat with you in any way?
Yeah, it has a little bit. I mean, there's, like I said, there's two ways you can look at it, like whether we do have enough or too short. But, you know, what this injury has taught me is that I've been able to break down things to the most simplistic form, and that comes back to time as well, you know. So, like I'm a simple man with simple pleasures as well, so I try and take in as much as I can, but I'm a bit of a contradiction in myself as well, because I'm always trying to plot the path forward. Like I'm always, you know, I always catch myself that I'm living in the future too much, you know, because I'm plotting that path. That there's always a way forward. I hope I can explain this right. There's always there's a point where you want to get to, and it's just all about reverse engineering, and then just taking the time to go through, you know, from point to point to point. You can only achieve one point at a time. You know, you've got your end goal, but reverse engineer it and just take the time and just focus on those simple methods of getting there.
Now, we'll talk through a lot of what you just summarized during this episode, but we'll also talk about present day, because one of the key reasons I wanted to talk to you and interview with this podcast is because you are a business owner. You do have a dream job. You own your own surf store. You've been working in the surf industry, surf retail. You've had your own shops for a long, long time now, and I'll let you talk to that in a sec. But the other thing that resonated for me, and I'd love to talk through some of this, was throughout your book, throughout your detailing of, I guess, the events that had to happen from, as you said, breaking your neck to getting to some level of medical support. And then really the second part of the book is the process and going through the, you know, what I'm sure is phase one of a recovery and rehab. Throughout it, you talk a lot about work and a lot about the motivation and inspiration that your business, your job, your staff, everything in between gave you. And I was surprised about it because it's sort of, when you think about it, you're like, the last thing I think about is work, you know, everything else I've got to deal with, the fact I'm injured, money, life, blah, blah, blah. But I wanted to sort of stop and just ask you, why do you think work remained, even in a crisis, so interesting, important, motivational for you?
Well, when I was writing the book, I didn't realise I'd spoken about work so much, you know, but I guess looking back throughout my life, like I'm a second generation surfer. So my father was a surfer. but he was also working in the surf industry as well. So as a little grommet, I was always in the factory looking at all these guys making boards, you know, out on the shop floor looking at things. And I guess that had such an influence to me that was just instilled in me that maybe that was what I was always going to do. I loved it that much that I was always going to end that way. And maybe because I spoke about work so much, it's just because it's so intuitive in me. Like, it's not work to me. This is something I've always done ever since I was a little grommet. And whether it's the people I've worked with, which I feel are my people, you know, the people that come that are get you know, walk into the store are still my people. I've supported my life through surfing, so I don't actually see it as work. It's just a part of me and how I function through life.
Mate, that's a gold answer. And that's what I expected to hear, an answer like that, because, you know, it's quite humbling, and I'm not surprised to hear you say that, you know, after you wrote the book and probably read it back, you realised you talk about work a lot. And I think that hearing that even makes it, to me, really understand that it was real, like a lot of that stuff. And as you said, you know, your work was more than just a job. Like it is for a lot of us, it's part of our life. You know, we spend so much time working and in jobs that if we hate it, it really matters. But if we love it and we enjoy it and it is that, you know, quote unquote dream job, it's just a part of our life. It's part of our everyday. It's part of who we see, etc. So that's really awesome. I think there's something in that. I was really impressed by it, and just really interested in it. And it sounded like it was something that really helped you make a difference to stepping through the huge recovery that you had to do. So what I'd love to do, if I can, is while I was listening to your book, even before I thought about, you know, getting in contact and setting this interview up, I actually took down a few notes of things that that you really hit home on. And what I'd like to do is step through them and kind of see, and you can take the journey, you can take this conversation where you will, but I'd love to sort of talk through some of these things that I wrote down from your book. And have you talked to, I guess, how they made a difference and why they mattered during the crisis that you went through, and or why they've mattered since, and or why they matter in a job and in work and in business, if that's okay. You want to play the little game?
All right, let's go.
Righto, so the first one, pretty clear one, is mindset. You obviously talk a lot about mindset in the book and the importance of having, you know, an appropriate or the right mindset. So talk to me about that and how that mattered at the time, has mattered ever since, and how you think it really, why you think it really matters in the workforce.
Okay, well, I've always had the thought that when it comes to stress, that you can't really control stress, you can't really control external factors. So if we just remain sort of focused, we can just move through as best as you can. Anything else outside that, you can't really control. So just focusing on the things you can really control is to get there. When it comes to another set of mindset I have is like there's always someone in a worse spot. So no matter how bad things can be, there is actually someone a bit worse, you know. So I learnt very early that, you know, I'd lived in a hospital for 9 months going through this. So I've seen a lot of bad things. I've seen a lot of good things as well. But I quickly realised that I was focusing on guys that were more capable than me about doing things. You know, I pretty much lived on the spinal ward, and that was the shoulder ward to the brain ward. So I did see some ugly things, and I did find myself looking, as I said, at the paraplegic, so the guys that had all arm function, they had balance and stuff, and wished, you know, I could do what they did. And then I quickly realised that there was guys laying in bed still, you know, that were paralysed from the neck down who couldn't do anything. So I quickly realised that I was super lucky where I was. So instead of looking forward and wanting to be at some place that I couldn't be, I had no control of being, that I was super happy being in the place I was, unfortunately, because of people that were less fortunate than me. So, and I've used that going forward in sort of all aspects of life. whether it's, you know, seeing my daughter go through sort of some dramas, whether it's going through any sort of issues through work, you know, it may be not so good, but it could be a lot worse. So let's just focus on what we have and move forward from there.
The next one I think you're going to find quite interesting, and I know it's going to be an interesting answer. And I might actually just get you to set this up because you're a business owner. How long have you owned your retail stores for?
I've owned it now for 16 years.
Okay. And just for a bit of context, for those that are listening, you're obviously in a wheelchair given your injury. Can you just define the injury that you...
So I'm a C7 complete quadriplegic. So complete means that below my level of injury, which is pretty much straight line from my armpits. Armpits down, I don't feel a thing or I can't move a thing. It also affects, I'm pretty much paralyzed from my elbows down to my fingers as well. So it means I can move my arms, but all my fingers are affected. So luckily I've had one operation in one arm where I've had tendon transfer, so I can get a grip in a hand. The fingers in the other hand don't function at all. So that's what they call a C7. So it's a level of my neck where I broke my neck. Quadriplegic.
So let's be real, mate. Work and tough, and it works tough. Owning a business is hard for everybody under the sun. Let alone when you've got to deal with these changes in your life. You talk a lot about calmness and patience, and it first comes up obviously during your journey getting off the boat into medical support. But if you can also talk to me about the patience and calmness that I'm sure you've had to have, and just every business owner has to have in their career.
Well, I was forced to learn patience the hard way. Obviously, having not being able to be not being mobile at all, I've had to really rely on people to help me out. And with that comes, understanding their time and knowledge. So for me, having to, essentially wait around on things has been a big learning lesson. But it's also shown me how people are willing to, put down their swords and come and help where you do. I've been super fortunate within my staff that have helped me around. Just doing things like I've had to learn to, obviously with no fingers, I've had to learn on just doing things like, just simple chores like computer work. I had to set up a little office in my rehab in the hospital room to help. At least I had to work out what I couldn't do and how I could help the business and how I'd be, in the way. But I have been super fortunate that everyone's jumped in to help, and it's, I'm still learning going along this journey on what I can and can't do. The most frustrating thing is, things that took 5 seconds before the injury are now taking like 5 minutes. So add them all on top of each other. It takes, a day can get wiped off the schedule pretty quickly. But like I said, I enjoy learning. So every day is a learning curve for me. I'm still discovering what I can and can't do, or what accomplishments I can make. And that's what keeps me going. So, it's all good.
And, mate, you're obviously, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're not Yoda. You're still human. And despite, I guess, being forced to learn some level of art of, patience and calmness, you must get the same work and job and business frustrations that the rest of us do. Did that help, when you came back and I guess got back into working? Did the journey that you went on into recovery and rehab and the injury, do you think that helped in the workplace, just from sort of the general business qualms that we deal with day to day?
In terms of, if you wanted to boil my injury down into one word, it'd be frustration. So I've always been a super independent person, and that's why I always look at this as one big test for me, whether if you're spiritually or not, somebody's sending me a test. But frustration's been a real, not an issue for me, but something that, I come home and have a box with myself, over, you know, trying to rely on people, but things not getting done your way. But then on the same hand, being appreciative that things did get done a certain way rather than no way. So, you know, with frustration, you know, it bleeds into patience there. So it's a hard one to bridge, like, because you are super frustrated every day, but over time you just learn the patience gets, you know, just instills more and more patience in you. So again, it's just like a double-sided sword. It's like a tennis match. You know, frustration hits the ball, patience hits it back.
I think that's a good insight for everybody. Now, this one isn't a one-worder like the last one. This is something I wrote down. You said it a couple of times. You don't believe in fate or karma. Shit just happens.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I sort of believe, like, a lot of people like saying karma, like, everyone keeps telling me, God only gives us tests to people who can withstand it, and God has mysterious ways. But you know, I think the world's just made up of hundreds of random, billions, trillions, whatever, of random events. I'm just super unfortunate to have, you know, an event like this happen in my life. But whether you look at it, whether you're fortunate or unfortunate, to learn that, you know, what the human spirit can do, you know, most people don't get the chance to test that flight, fright, flight sense in you. I have, and I've learnt that, you know, I've come out of this a lot stronger. I know myself a lot better now, all because of the injury, you know. Without the injury, I would never know.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And I think that probably steps us on to another one I wrote down, and you talked a little bit about this in the great summary that you gave us, was around perspective and I guess, you know, knowing, seeing, setting those small goals towards achievement. Let's stay away from, you know, the injury and the recovery and more talk about your profession and running a business. Does that ring true every day, every week, every year for you, and I suppose in the year that we've had, year and a half now, being tested through COVID and everything that's thrown at us, is that something you're still preaching to yourself and to your staff and your business?
Yeah, definitely. I think accomplishment is a super important thing for all of us. And we were only speaking about this the other day at the store, because it was, you know, this time 12 months ago when things started blowing up, and we look back. Yeah, there was myself and my manager trying to set, you know, a path or a way forward, how we're going to plan through this. And we set little goals that we wanted to achieve. while this sort of pandemic was happening, you know, and we're only laughing about it, that we're sitting out the front plotting all these paths, and at each point where we hit the plot, we weren't high five, but we're laughing about going, wow, we just done these. And even though they're small accomplishments, it was giving us a bit of self-worth, you know, and it gave us that extra fuel to move across to the next one. So I think, and what I learned through my injury as well, that we just get so much fulfillment from each accomplishment we do make, but no matter how big or small it is.
I think it's a great one, mate, and it's one that it gets forgotten so easily when you're in the thick of it, you know, in your job, or you know, especially if you're a manager and a leader, sometimes you just forget to celebrate the wins, big, small, or indifferent. And we obviously, you know, we want to succeed, so there's so much focus on the problems or improvements and optimizations, etc., that you know, those accomplishments or achievements, as you mentioned, can fly by and are quickly forgotten, even though they shouldn't be. So that's a huge one. Bit of a transition, but one that I'd also like to sort of get a take from you on why this came up a couple of times in the book, when you were going through everything, going through the ordeal, if you want to call it that. I'm not actually sure what to call it, but, you know, the injury and the route to recovery. But also, I'd love to know what you think about this now. And this is, you talk a couple of things about, you had 100 things going on in your mind. And when you're talking about being in a random person's tiny helicopter that's running out of fuel in the middle of the Indonesian jungle, like, for sure, I got 1,000 things on my mind. Talk to me about that, and just relate it, if you can, to, it feels like that in business and in work sometimes as well, and how then you've learned to prioritize as a leader and as a business owner over these years.
Well, I guess that's a hard one, because as I said, there's a lot, I think there's a lot going on in everyone's head. Yep. And yeah, and then we need to get those thoughts to the lips to articulate it to get crew to you know, listen or follow the steps, you know, and that's something I do. That's probably, you know, my weakest area, unfortunately, is articulating the right message to the staff, and that's where I've had to lean on people to help me out. But as you can see now, you know, that is a struggle for me. But you know, like I said, I'm a simple man, so I just put it out in simple words. And that's best way I can describe it.
Yeah, so communication. And you know, maybe that steps us to another one that I wrote down was you talk about learning practically. You know, you reference, you know, learning on the job. And in the book, you're talking a lot about learning to, you know, move from a bed to a wheelchair, learning to use a wheelchair. Obviously, all these things that prior to the injury, you never had to worry about or think about. And unfortunately, like a lot of the listeners, you know, you take for granted. So you talk a lot about in the book about just learning this stuff and how you push yourself to learn it by doing it, as opposed to, I guess, you know, expecting it to happen or another stretch. Is that something you condone for, I guess, your employees and your staff, and you'd sort of condone for people progressing through their career, is like, you just get out there and rip into it, get into it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think all of my life I've just been somebody who's just, you know, pulled the socks up and just got it done. I believe that in reality, you know, there's things that happen in reality that just can't be written in textbooks. So we just need to all get out there and do it. The best way to learn is, like I said, through your mistakes. I don't think there's enough of it these days. And, you know, I give them the jobs, and I allow them to make the mistakes so they can become better at that certain job. So I'm a big believer in practicalities. You know, with my journey of living in a wheelchair, as I said before, I'm still learning things, you know. Yeah, like falling out of my chair. Like, I've fallen out of my chair a few times, and I've had to learn to, get back up in my chair. I've got no balance. I've got no strength, and I've got to get back into a chair that sits, you know, 2 foot high. You know, so there's nothing that anybody can tell me or nothing I can read that'll get me back into there. So all it is try and try again and just learn from there.
Yeah, I think that's a great advice. And, you know, and I think for you, by default, reading the book, your journey is motivating and inspiring. Like and it's certainly obviously not an intent of yours to do that, but, you know, just reading how you applied yourself to, you know, that road to recovery and I guess working out how to use a wheelchair for the first time and onwards, etc. It was really humbling reading that. So again, I implore people to kind of really keep a key eye out for that in the book. Learning on the job, I think, is a great one. Now, I intentionally laid these out chronological because the other one you talk about a lot is the ability, or what you're saying is a gift to cut corners, think outside the box, and find efficiencies on the job. So you talk a lot about learning how to do stuff, but then you also talk about the skill you have of, yeah, as I said, thinking outside the box, cutting corners. Talk to me about that.
Well, I won't say it's where it comes from almost being lazy by nature, but, you know, a lot of people like to talk about thinking outside the box. I like to think of it sometimes as looking inside the box and whether we need to get, you know, if we need to get from point A to D, whether B and C is necessary to get to those points. So, you know, instead of plotting the path and going right around the corner, is it easy just apexing that corner and getting straight to there? And just really, you know, weighing up whether those points are all necessary to getting to the point we're aiming towards. Or on the other hand, you know, looking totally way outside the box and looking for a total new route or route altogether.
That's the fit. And if I can jump from that to, I guess, what inspires you with your job, with your business, why do you do what you do? And then I'll bring it back to that thinking outside the box and finding efficiencies. But yeah, why do you own a surf store? Why do you run your own business? What drives you with that?
Well, I think as I said before, the independence by nature is a big thing. I've surfed ever since I can remember. You know, I've served every job I've had has felt like an apprenticeship to exactly where I am at this point. You know, I've worked through, you know, I've built boards before. Well, I started off sweeping shaping bays and then progressed, you know, to help manufacture boards. I've moved into, you know, into sales, into marketing, back into manufacturing, into, you know, buying, and now I'm running my own store. But I think I just get the joy from being my own man, being able to, you know, to be independent in my own way, where I can look after my family without the man hanging over my head. And also, you know, obviously before the injury, it felt like it was all about, you know, obviously, looking after the family, but still give me that time to surf as much as I can, keep me close to the ocean. And now as I look now in a wheelchair, it still gives me that time and that appreciation to talk, just so I can talk surf every day, talk about conditions, talk about everyone surfing, you know, talk to my people, you know, and that's, you know, along with the independency is just being around my people and just working within that.
And what about, I'm glad you used the word joy, that's a great word, that's really good. I wonder what brings you joy in the, I guess, the hardcore business performance sense. You know, is it, you know, chasing certain products that you put into your retail store that you're taking a punt on? Is it customers? Is it bringing in new customers? Is it relationships that you have with other industry folk? Like, what are those, I guess, small business performance moments or situations that bring you joy and, I guess, you know, bring you happiness as a business owner?
Well, I think I like the game of it all, you know, almost competing against myself. So, you know, you look at all, you know, your KPIs and trying to better that each quarter or each year, and just that, you know, we're always on the wheel trying to beat those figures. I love everyone in the industry. I've been in the industry, you know, all my life and all my working life, you know, so I've built some great relationships there. That they're kind of like semi-family. All my staff, you know, I've been super fortunate, especially these last sort of 5 to 10 years where I built really strong relationships with those guys. And I guess I'm at a point now where, you know, I've learned from what I believe is some great mentors along the way. And I think I'm at a point now where I'm trying to hand off knowledge to the young guys, you know, coming through behind me, you know, whether it's my staff or, you know, young reps coming through or something. I get real joy in just trying to pass on the stuff that the others above me that have been in a long time have given to me.
Mate, if I can dig into that knowledge a little bit deeper, and if we can share it to the listener, and you can keep us in retail or you can expand this out to just, you know, self-business, own business, in a sense as well. But, you know, what's a thing or two that you'd share or you do advise, you know, youngsters that are probably hoping to have their own business in the future? What would you share?
I think just stay close to your principles, what your principles are in life, whatever they are. Stick to that, stick to who you are. You know, a lot of people say to me, oh, you know, it's great what you've done, what you've accomplished, what you've done. And when I look at myself, like, you know, I just don't look at myself. I still think of me as that 15, 16-year-old kid, you know, just, as I said, wanting to surf more, wanting just to hang out. I haven't got here through any sort of, you know, it's just been human agency within myself and, you know, and just where I stayed close to my principles, I guess, that have actually got me to this point, you know. So I would say stay strong. Like I said, stay close to your principles and just keep carrying on no matter, you know, what strips get torn off you. You know, just if you fall down, just keep getting back up. Just keep getting back over and over and you'll get there.
There's a humbleness in that for sure, but you're right, and I think, you know, everyone's going to get hit by setbacks, challenges, whatever word you want to call it, right, in their job, in their business, in their life, so that's awesome. Just to build a little bit more on inspiration, and this, I found this was one thing where it's sort of, you know, six degrees of separation for me. You talk in the book, one thing that helped inspire you was, I think you said it was a friend of yours gave you a poster of Mick Fanning after he'd won the world title. Is a really, you know, infamous photo in the surf industry of Mick pointing to the sky, obviously acknowledging a brother of his that had passed away when he won the world title in Brazil, and it's an amazing photo that was captured. You know, huge crowd carrying him, you know, the euphoria that is winning anything, let alone a world title, first world title. I was in Brazil at the time. I used to work for Rip Curl. I was in Brazil, you know, with Mick, hoping that he was going to win the world title so we could market and media that. When I came back, you know, worked with the guys at Rip Curl, the designers, to sort of help kind of turn that amazing photo into like a whole marketing creative. You know, Mick's nickname was White Lightning, so we came up with the whole lightning strikes and all that kind of stuff. It was really, so it was, you know, very personal to kind of hear that you had, you know, you talked the story, but you put that poster up in the hospital for quite an amount of time, right? What was it about that got you?
Well, I still think that's one of the best images, marketing-wise, that the surf industry has come out with. But I had that image. It was actually the guys at Rip Curl in Singapore that I think Adam Sharp from over here organised. And they brought that image in, and as soon as I seen the image, I just thought that was exactly what I needed. You know, I was laying in a hospital bed, flat on my back. I had my family around. And I put this image up right above my bed or right above the door, which I was pretty much the only thing I could look at. And it was just that image of that's what I need. I exactly need that, like a lightning bolt just to, you know, to fire my body back up. So I just stared at that image for, you know, every second of every day, just imagining that's exactly what I needed. And obviously Mick's journey as well, that was a big part of it. You know, he was severely injured and he came back. I've always loved the movies of, you know, the underdog or the guy that was, you know, on the bottom and he got to the top. But the other thing that really inspired me during there, so I had Mick's photo there front and centre, but, well, when was this? 2008. So this was just as Facebook was coming to MySpace there, but everyone was still faxing over messages, you know. So everyone was sending me faxes from, all around the place into this hospital in Singapore. They actually came in and had to tell us to ask everyone to stop because it was jamming up their faxes. So I had a stack, you know, a foot high of one page sort of messages that we stuck all around the ICU ward, you know. And that's what gave me the inspiration, was just life. Like all the friends, you know, obviously my family, my daughter's been a massive inspiration to me just to keep going. But also just all the family and friends and everyone who was like, you know, jumped on my cape and was just wishing me along the way, you know. So, you know, it was just, I wish I had photos. I was just a mixed photos there and just the whole wall's blanketed in messages from everyone. And that's what keeps me going, is just people, I guess, life in general.
Mate, that, I think that's a brilliant way for us to close. You know, the human connection, regardless of the job or the work that we have to do, and hopefully the person listening has that dream job already, but if they're aspiring to get one, you know, those little things, being open to people, being accepted, you know, doing your networking when you need to, but, you know, staying socially connected to people. And there's all those things, like, it's not what you know, it's who you know. Like, all those things ring true in business as well, right, a lot of the time. So I think that's a great one to end on. You know, obviously with your staff and the work connections you have through your business, it's critical to your success and forever will be. So, mate, I really appreciate our time. This has been so awesome. Thanks for walking through some of those things. They jumped off the page at me when I was reading your book. I loved that when I looked at them, they related to not only, I guess, the you know, the mission that you had to endure with the injury and everything after that, but also, you know, we're obviously critical to your success in business since then. So, Daz, I really appreciate it.
Thanks, mate. No problems.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.